This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Shaoning. The sugar tax in Malaysia kicks in today. Now, plans for a sugar tax were proposed at the tabling of the 2019 budget last year, intended to promote healthy living amongst a population that has some of the highest rates of diabetes and obesity in Southeast Asia.
So reports say that a 40-cent tax per litre will be imposed on soft drinks with more than 5 grams of sugar or sugar-based sweetener per 100 ml. So this will include carbonated drinks or flavoured and other non-alcoholic beverages. Now, for juice or vegetable drinks, a 40-cent tax per litre will be imposed on drinks with more than 12 grams of sugar per 100 ml.
Now, this tax is being imposed on manufacturers, so they're likely to feel the direct impact first. And this includes the manufacturers of their carbonated soft drinks, ready-to-drink coffee and teas, Asian drinks such as chrysanthemum tea and soy milk, along with juices and flavoured milk.
So to help us paint a picture of how a sugar tax might impact consumer behaviour, we have Troy Donnell on the line, Executive Director at Nielsen Malaysia. Thank you for joining us, Troy. So how effective would a sugar tax, the way it is proposed by the Malaysian government, be in curbing consumption, in your opinion?
I mean, let me start by saying the sugar tax alone is not going to solve Malaysia's health and obesity problems. The reason I say that is, despite sugary drinks being very popular in Malaysia, and in fact, carbonated soft drinks are one of the most popular consumed packaged beverages, Malaysians are also very price sensitive. So depending on the magnitude of the increase that's passed on to consumers, we will see a number of outcomes, I suppose, in terms of consumption. So it may be they opt to buy less beverages. It may be that they opt to buy lower sugar options, or it may be that they opt to buy different beverages altogether. We recently did a study, actually, with consumers, and we asked them, if a sugar tax was implemented, how would your behaviour change? And 50% of consumers told us that they would change their behaviour as a result of the sugar tax. They would reduce the consumption of CSD as a result of that sugar tax. Further to that, 1 in 5 consumers said that they would buy a less sugar variant, and almost 10% said that they would stop buying consumer CSDs altogether. So there's a really good chance that the sugar tax being implemented will curb consumption. The key question is how much.
And based on what you know from other countries, how have sugar taxes changed manufacturer and advertisers' behaviour?
Sugar tax of some sort has been implemented in around 40 countries around the world. When it comes to manufacturers and advertisers, there are 5 key strategies we've seen being implemented to combat and offset the impact of the sugar tax. Distribution, pricing, packaging, innovation, of course, and how manufacturers choose to advertise and communicate to their consumers and their shoppers. If I elaborate, from a distribution perspective, of course, it's getting into the right stores and the right location in those stores. Manufacturers putting a lot of effort into that space around the world, and we've already seen that in place here in Malaysia. Innovation, of course, is a key driver and a key strategy for manufacturers. And in fact, in the past 6 months, we've seen a number of new variants come into the market that are low sugar or no sugar variants into the carbonated soft drink category. And in fact, the share of low sugar variant carbonated soft drinks has tripled over the past 12 months. So the third strategy is, of course, around packaging. There's a lot of effort being put around the world from manufacturers in terms of how they communicate to consumers using packaging and highlighting low sugar content on the actual product. The fourth is, of course, around pricing. With the tax being imposed, as I said, manufacturers have a choice. They can either apply and pass on that tax as it is, or they can choose to introduce smaller pack sizes and maintain that pricing. So we'll see a combination of those different strategies, I think. And finally, communication. Of course, as there's a desire to shift the consumption of carbonated soft drinks, we've seen manufacturers putting more of their spend against low-sugar or no-sugar variants.
And Troy, for sugar tax to really affect consumption patterns, what level of tax starts to bite?
We have seen significant differences in terms of success rate. So if I talk about Philippines firstly, average retail prices increased by about 13% in the Philippines when the sugar tax was implemented in 2018. And the category declined by about 6%. So it had an impact in terms of curbing consumption within that category. The declines came from consumers purchasing less frequently. And interestingly, which we see in many of the markets, the key beneficiary of the sugar tax being implemented and consumers changing their behaviour was bottled water, where bottled water saw an increase in terms of household penetration and also share of basket. The second country I'd like to highlight where we're seeing success and therefore gives you some indication of where it's really starts to bite and change consumer behaviour is Saudi Arabia. 100% tax was implemented on energy drinks and 50% tax was imposed on soda drinks. So pretty significant versus what will be implemented here in Malaysia and, of course, what's been implemented in other markets. There was strong value and volume decline as a result of that. And post the implementation, 50% of consumers said that they were consuming less sugar drinks post implementation. So another example of what it would take to really have an impact on consumer behaviour.
Thank you very much, Troy. And that was Troy Donnell of Nielsen Malaysia weighing in on what he sees as the effect of the sugar tax. Now, he pointed out that the sugar tax alone is not going to solve the obesity problem, but Nielsen did conduct a survey and found that Malaysians are very price sensitive and that 50% in their survey would change their consumer behaviour based on whether or not a sugar tax came into implementation. We are running our own survey this morning as well. So far, 39% of the 100 respondents have said yes, a sugar tax would discourage them from drinking sugary drinks. You've got about an hour left to vote and we'll take a look at the results throughout the morning, so be sure to weigh in on that conversation. Now, in the meantime, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs released a report on Friday on its assessment of Pakatan Harapan's progress in fulfilling its manifesto promises.
Yeah, so they found that in general, the government has made some strides towards making good on its promises, such as abolishing the GST, extending support to SMEs, and also making an effort to reform public procurement. However, ideas highlighted four ambitious targets which are providing to be a challenge, which reflect the unrealistic nature of some of Pakatan Harapan's promises, and one of them being cost of living.
Yes, cost of living was not lowered just because GST was abolished. In fact, many see SST as an inferior tax. Ideas said that the government's focus on controls and subsidies are unsustainable as they do not address the fundamental issues in affordability. Another issue, of course, was PTPTN. Ideas says that PTPTN's debt situation is unsustainable as the amount owed is increasingly exponential. The 51% of total borrowers have not paid their loans consistently, while 19% of borrowers have not even paid 1 cent.
40 billion, huh? In
yes.
total?
Yeah, something like that. Now, affordable housing is another area that Ideas has weighed in on because their research director, Lawrence Todd, said that just over 3,500 affordable homes were built in the first year of Pakatan's administration. That's a long way to go to reach the goal of 1 million affordable homes in 10 years. Ideas suggests that the government will only be able to reach half of that amount. Money for healthcare is another thing. Pakatan's promised better access to health services and to allocate 4% of GDP to the Ministry of Health. But Todd says that at the current rate of budget increase, it'll only push health spending to 2.74% of the GDP by 2023.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, just going back again, Lynn, how you mentioned about the 1 million affordable home. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about that as to how we come up with the number of 1 million affordable home to begin with. I mean, at the moment, yeah, there is a lot of talk about needing affordable home, but whether or not this emphasis of 1 million is whether it's based on, you know, actual statistics.
I mean, it's a nice round number. It sounds very good. But we don't really know whether any feasibility studies went into the decision to build 1 million affordable homes by 10 years. So I guess the cracks in that are starting to show.
Yeah, in terms of just the property market, it continues to be an issue, not just for affordable homes, but just overall in terms of overall supply. Even the government has extended its home ownership campaign, which was started earlier this year. Now it's been extended to 2019. I guess the supply situation is still a key concern. But going back to this idea study, I think it's important to note that they highlighted the lack of political will as the main issue. Now, in terms of other issues that the idea said needed work was GLC reform, strengthening the role of the state governments, backing out of oppressive laws like the Official Secrets Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are some of the things that are still really do need more work. And I think we have had this discussion about political will here on The Morning Run several times, because certain things like, for example, Latifa Koya's appointment to the MACC, those are things that could have been averted, like the backlash to that could have been averted just with exercising a little bit more transparency and accountability. And these were things that Pakatan Harapan promised when they initially came into power, but so far have not quite managed to deliver on. So the reason for that has been essentially put down to a lack of political will.
Yeah, I understand where, when we discuss about political will, there are some areas that probably Pakatan Harapan could have, addressed. But at the same time, there are other issues. For example, that when reality sinks in, it's just much more difficult than it is. For example, mm-hmm. Two of the four that ideas highlighted, which is cost of living as well, PTPTN, like it or not, PTPTN, as much as you would want to just forgive, but look at the amount. We're speaking about 40 billion debt, which in the next course of a few more decades, it could, it could balloon up to 70 over billion dollars. And is this something that the government could afford? That's number one. And cost of living as well, GST, as much as government is still struggling to how to fill up that gap between, when they decided to abolish. I know, as much as we wanted, the idea was to abolish GST so that prices could go down, but it doesn't seem that, with the introduction of SST, things are happening in that direction. So what's next, it's not as easy. There are some things that they can. So whether or not manifesto at the end of the day is... Oh, well, we in the future, we have to take it with a pinch of salt.
Well, it is 1 year, and some of the issues that we are facing today cannot honestly be resolved in 1 year. That's the honest truth of it all. Mm. But I guess what we need to see as Malaysians is that progress is being made and the right messages are being sent out. Sometimes you get this feeling, especially for some of it, like, for me, education is a bit flip-flopping. Mm-hmm. Foreign affairs is another thing where we agreed to sign certain statutes and then we kind of did a backtrack. Sure. Those are the issues maybe perhaps we could be a little bit more forceful in our tone.
And I think a lot of those could be really just put down to political inexperience, right? Because the majority of our cabinet, for example, has never been in government before. But at the end of the day, I think me personally, I've given up hope of Pakatan Harapan manifesto elections coming true. What I do hope for is institutional reform, right? So I want to see reforms being pushed through to give more power to legislature, to give more power to the parliaments, to the state governments, in order to prevent the situation that we saw that eventually led to GE14, right? So regardless of how, the success or failure of this Pakatan Harapan government, the fact is that they did come in on this promise of reform, and that, I think, for me, is the main one that I want to see fulfilled. Now, aside from that, also, though, there has been some news out of the opposition, specifically UMNO. Mm-hmm. Just because Dato' Sri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi has announced that he's back as UMNO president with immediate effect.
That's right. So he made this announcement at the Bagan Datuk Parliamentary Constituency Raya celebration yesterday. So I guess yesterday was the last weekend for Raya, and then it was live streamed on Facebook. He was elected as UMNO president in party election last year, and he, as a result of everything that's been going on with his life, he took leave post on December 18 after accusation that he was unable to lead the party in the face of defection UMNO leaders.
I didn't even know he left.
Well,
he faces 87 criminal charges now for corruption, money laundering and criminal breach of trust. That's more than our former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak and his wife Datin Sri Rosmah. Among the charges are 27 for money laundering totaling 72 million ringgit and 12 CBD charges for over 31 million ringgit of charity funds.
So Zaid really takes the cake in terms of criminal charges currently on trial. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.